Coming up in today's podcast, we'll review last season and question, did we bizarrely, in the end, underachieve? There'll be an in-depth look at each and every squad player. Madam Boyd will provide you with the rumour of the week, and we'll discuss Sky and what's the point of Phil Clark and Stuart Cummings. Also, what possible hiccups Wire can perhaps expect in 2019. There'll be stats on Gareth Widdop and Blake Austin. Can he shake off the condition known as the Josh Hodgson effect? Plus the runners and riders for the top five, along with Dennis Waywell's tackle bags. And not forgetting too, we'll predict next week's mouth-watering opening game against Leeds. This is a new podcast for all you Wire fans. What would Brian Bevan say? So here goes. My name's Rob London. I'm coming to you not from London or from Warrington for that matter, but Sydney, Australia. I've been out here about 20 years, but I've been a Wire fan for about 40 years. Up until emigrating, you'd have found me at Wilderspool on a Friday night for a good old traditional A-team game with a team sheet listed of A and others before heading across the causeway into town for a pint with my mates. There was only one place to be on a Sunday afternoon, and that was with my dad at Wilderspool, watching the likes of Bob Eccles, Steve Hesford, John Bevan, all the way through to the likes of Boyd, Roach, Davidson, Tamati, and let's not forget the wonderful Greg Mackey and Mike Gregory. God rest their souls. So without further ado, I'll introduce you to my first co-host. He was born in Warrington, but now lives close to Glastonbury, replacing white bread from the corner shop on Densham Avenue for Somerset vegan artisan sourdough bakeries. It's Dennis Waywell. Dennis, hello.
Right, okay, that was a polished performance and introduction there, but I'm going to lower the tone from now. Thanks for having me.
Very good to hear.
Just a couple of things. I mean, I've been really looking forward to this. It's one of these things where you have so much opinion, but you're never able to voice it. So this is a bit of an opportunity, I think. So I think one of the things I'd like to say is thanks for inviting me. We'll put a lot of time in, and at the end of the day, I've got all else to do. So welcome.
Good on you, Dennis. Well, to be fair, we've only invited you on for support. We're going to get our real information and give this podcast a little bit of integrity from a man who firstly lives in Warrington. Secondly, he's a season ticket holder at Warrington. He's far less bigoted and opinionated than myself and Dennis. He's going to bring us the stats. Joining us from Warrington, it's Sam Sankey. Hello, Sam.
Hello, good evening. And again, thanks for having me. If you're using me to bring a touch of credibility and articulation to this podcast, then we really are scraping the barrel. But I'll see what I can do for you.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I should probably say that it's about 7:30 in the morning here in Sydney on Saturday. It's Australia Day here. But over in the UK, in Glastonbury and Warrington, it's coming up to about 8:30 in the evening on Friday. I can see both you boys are started on the tipples. Dennis, what are you drinking there?
This is I've got my opportunity to plug it now. This is a Timothy Taylor. It's one of a variety of different ales made in Keighley in Yorkshire. So I'm actually defecting, obviously, from being from Lancashire. But even so, it's probably the best ale I've had. So I'm looking forward to a Timothy Taylor in the post now from the brewery.
From Timothy Taylor, yeah, very good. Yeah, is it a bitter or a mild? I mean, I'm still stuck in the days of mild. I used to get mild for 80 pence a pint in the townhouse on a Friday night. Are we still sort of at those prices over there?
I think you'd be ripped off there because I think I was in the old bowl and it was about 70p. So being south of the river, though, you probably, you know, struggled with prices, didn't you?
Can you still get Labatt's?
Bloody hell. I had a T-shirt once with Labatt's on it that my dad pinched from Tetley Walker's club.
Tetley Walker's pint, was it?
Can we just get back to mentioning Timothy Taylor?
Sam, you seem to be on the wine down there.
Yeah, well, south of the river here, we don't bother anymore. We're working class drinks. I've got a nice crisp Chardonnay from Australia, only because of you, Rob. I thought I'd try this tonight. Refreshing. It's about 9 degrees today, a lot warmer needs something to cool down with.
Right, fair enough. Fair enough. Sounds good. Okay, well, we should probably crack on, shouldn't we? Before we sort of look at this year and what's going to happen and the squad and everything else, I just want to get your thoughts on where your sort of history with Warrington Rugby League Club started. Mine started at Wilderspool. I can't quite remember the date or the year that I went. It all sort of blurs into one. My earliest memories are walking down Fletcher Street. Would have been about 1975, 1976. There was always a bloke stood there with a huge billboard saying, "Repent, repent, Jesus loves you. Don't go into the match," which I always thought was fantastic to see. And then a couple of years later, I was at Main Road watching Manchester City, and lo and behold, he was standing outside there on a Saturday. So it wasn't just the rugby league he did. He did the
sounds like,
he did the
sounds like a
well.
Santa Claus story, this, isn't it? You know, you're just like,
very
it's the same. It's the same bloke. Jeez, gets
going
around
everywhere,
a bit, doesn't he?
I'm sure, actually. I'm sure he was still there on the very last game against Wakefield. He used to, you're right, about halfway, well, maybe two-thirds of the way down Fletcher Street, he used to stand there with his big chalkboard.
That's the guy. So if any of our listeners know who he was, who he is, at the end of the show, we'll give out ways that you can get in contact with us.
I want to know what he's got written on the board. I think that's more interesting.
Repent, repent. That's what he used to say.
Jesus loves you.
All this kind of bullshit. That's what was there. Jesus. My earliest memory inside the ground, I've got a couple. The first one, and it was probably because it was a bit left field, was a test match at Warrington. About 1977, 78, my dad took me along. It was in the stand prior to it burning down. We played France. We should have been, I would expect we were Great Britain, not England. John Bevan played at centre. I think he was the only Warrington representative in the team. And we stood up and sang the national anthem. So that's the kind of one that stands out. The other one was a pantomime villain. I went to watch Warrington play Bradford Northern, similar year. And Bradford Northern had forgotten their kit, and they played in the Warrington away kit. And we had a front row of bald forwards, all these big forwards, and the game was a dirty game. Dark, satanic Sunday afternoon. And one of the Bradford forwards got sent off, and he ripped the shirt as he left the field. And everyone went absolutely mental in the stand. I remember that one as well. So for you, Dennis...
Oh, I'm sorry, he's still going on with that.
Earliest memory at Wilderspool?
I think earliest memory, you know, it sounds daft this, but like you've already mentioned, everything's a blur and you can't, you know, you're looking for your standout things. The only earliest thing I can
think about is... That was probably because you had a bottle of wine and about three spliffs before we used to walk to the ground, wasn't it?
Well, all right, I was only about 12 at the time, but... I think the thing is that the only thing I remember is looking at snookers and going, what the bloody hell's up there? And thinking, oh. And I did get sidetracked for a while at that age and played snooker. So I don't know whether it was influenced by Wilderspool in a roundabout way. But I always used to...
Was that about the year Tony Meo missed the blue in the...
It was
the
yellow. You know very Reddit. Well it was yellow. I'm going to talk
Pretty
over you. It was yellow.
Sure it was blue.
That was yellow, and we'll move on, because I think the other memorable thing as well is that behind snookers was, of course, Legends, which
was
Friday night haunt for many a year. And so, again, that ground has got two quite sort of memorable things that sort of have affected my life in a way. Nothing to do with rugby.
I snuck into Legends at 15 to watch Iago in the original room. As you went in, it was on the right, not the left, not the indie room that then carried on. I've still got a restraining order out on the indie room.
Yeah. That makes sense.
There was always a couple of blokes who obviously thought it was cheaper to go and have a game of snooker at Legends, and then they'd sneak round the boarding and you'd see them there with the snooker cues watching the game.
Yeah, watching the match. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they used to have to climb up through that trap door to get up to the commentary place.
And the ball would go on the roof, and someone from the commentary box would have to precariously go out onto that asbestos roof, pick it up and throw it down. And it would always land on that tarpaulin above the spectators on the other side. And they'd absolutely shit themselves as the ball hit the stand. And my dad, being a physicist, would say, "Oh, listen to that, Rob. You can clearly see the ball hitting the roof prior to the sound arriving in this stand." Put me off physics for life.
You just lost one listener.
Yeah. Right. For you, Sam, your earliest memory?
Well, I came to the matches a lot later than you two, from what you've just been saying, because my earliest memory of rugby league generally was sat with my granddad listening to a crackly radio. So 80, 81, I should have looked it up really and sounded like I knew what I was talking about.
Statman's hits again.
I didn't actually start going till the mid-80s. I remember, I think the first memory I've got was Les Boyd and Kurt Sorensen having a set to by the dugouts, a nighttime game.
Yeah, it was a Wednesday night game. That was right in front of me. And Sorensen nearly got his jersey pulled off. And I actually found it quite erotic. I used to spend the half-time interval just throwing coins into that blanket that used to slice about 8 people's heads open every week on the front row. And being from south of the Rigger, we tended to throw 50 pences back then, which was a lot of money. You'd have been throwing coppers there, wouldn't you, Dennis?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I'm surprised you were actually throwing coins. I thought you'd just be folding your £10 notes up and making paper aeroplanes fly in a minute.
Well, actually, that's true, because sitting next to a physicist, I could probably have done that.
Maybe for a future segment on this podcast could be, did you get cut by a coin at Wilderspool?
Yeah. How much is that worth?
Oh, and there's another battle going on. Well, this is the unacceptable face of rugby league. Warrington player chased the Wigan man from behind and battered him. And this game is right out of control at the moment.
So before we look at 2019, I want to just go over 2018 because it was the first year we had Steve Price in charge. I think we were all a little bit apprehensive about Price. We weren't quite sure of his form. You know, he took over a team at the Dragons maybe that was a little bit similar to when Moyes took over the team after Ferguson at United. I think he was sort of left out to dry. Things didn't go too well for him. He ended up carrying the water bottle at Cronulla. But both at the Dragons and Cronulla, as reserve grade coach, second coach, whatever you want to call him, both teams won the grand final. So I'm not sure what we thought we were going to get. We started the season apprehensively based on the fact that it had gone completely dog shit under Smith the year before. Our opening game was against Leeds, as it will be this year. We lost that game. I'm going to just try and find the team. I'll run through that team and we'll sort of compare it to the team that we've got this year. The team was Ratchford, Lynham, Goodwin, Atkins, Russell, Kevin Brown, Roberts, Hill, Clark, Cooper, Curry, Hughes and Ben Murdoch-Masilla. The subs were Westwood, Philburn, George King and Patton. You were there, Sam.
Yep.
I watched it from Oz on my illegal stream through the VPN. Dennis was watching it on his Cody box in Glastonbury, Pro Rugby League, the pair of us. What did you think of it?
As you've just read through the team, the thing that struck me was as how bad our wingers were to begin with. Lynham improved massively as the season went on and got more confident. And of course, Russell, well, he had one good season. He was very game. He was he was a trier. God loves a trier. But really lacking.
That kind of sums up Dennis's approach to legends. He always starts poorly, but he was a trier, weren't you, Dennis?
I was a steady cart horse, as you know. I was there at the end, not like disappearing because you were too worried about how much you'd have to pay after 12 o'clock. I've got to go back to Thelwall.
Oh, there sounds some bitterness there between you two.
I used to walk home along Lowsher's Lane.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yeah.
Always felt safe after I got over the cantilever. it was a bit...
It was a quiet start, not just to our game, to the whole of Super League, really. It felt like the season didn't really get going till after the World Club Challenge. It's almost like a false dawn those first couple of weeks.
We didn't really realise, probably at that stage, just how Bobbins leads were going to be.
About 10 of us met with Steve Price and Henderson, and this is not meant as a joke, how he looked you straight in the eye, and he looked at you and you thought, bloody hell, he really is fixing on me here. Whereas the year before, Smith was far more woolly and wild, looked round the room, he looked us in the eye and he said, it won't be pretty, we'll get the defence right first and then we'll start to improve. And it's only really reflecting and looking back on that that he's probably right. We weren't pretty at all for those first few weeks.
It's not too dissimilar to when I make love to my partner. I always say to her, it won't be pretty. We'll get the defence right. And this year I've brought in a bit of resilience to my lovemaking.
Are you on the shot clock?
1 point, Mac, you look for, no. Gregory. Drummond, they could get everything. It's Bob Jackson. It's been his match. It's Warrington's Cup. Jacko makes it certain. And that's what it means to them. He's the man of the match for me. Bob Jackson.
I say it every year that the first game is the most important game. And if you don't get it right in that game, because it's all about confidence, and it happens every year. And I think, for a stat man, I think what we should look at is winning the first few games. How we finished in the league at the end of the season, because it's definitely a relationship there of actually starting the season well and actually getting two or three wins.
That was about as interesting as Mark Lawrenson on Football Focus.
but it's been really bothering me. I've been thinking about this for ages, but just can't be asked to actually do the work. But now I've found someone who can do the work.
The season sort of took a real dip. And this was the moment where I think Price realised what Warrington's all about. Growing up watching Warrington, they'd be wonderful at Wilderspool 1 week. And then you'd listen to them on the radio the following week when they cross the Pennines. And they get obliterated by Halifax by 25 points, and you'd think, what the hell's gone wrong there? That's not the team that turned up last week. Well, if there was one game last season, and credit to Price, I think there was only possibly one game all year where we didn't turn up. I think we had half a game in the Magic Weekend against Wigan where Wigan were on fire and we did struggle. And also there was the week before the Challenge Cup final at Castleford where we went with all the best intentions, but I think the team really had their eyes on London. But the week that really stands out to me where Price thought, oh, this is what it's all about, is it Super League, was Huddersfield away. It was atrocious conditions. Ratchford kicked out on the full. There was an hilarious comedy moment between Russell and Ratchford trying to defuse a kick behind their own try line, which ended in a Huddersfield try.
Can I stop you there? It was hilarious for you. It wasn't hilarious for those of us sat freezing cold in the stands watching it.
Do you? Well, that was the night, really, wasn't it, where they must have got back on the coach and thought, OK, I've got a bit of work to do here.
I think I could sum that up by, I think I remember speaking to you on the phone that night and saying that I was not going to another away match as long as I lived.
The thing about it is, though, is Huddersfield, I mean, they've had that new coach last year, haven't they? And did he actually come in mid-season?
They didn't play under him, did they, when they got rid of him? My dad goes up the wall about the, oh, Danny Brough kicked us, they kicked him to victory. How many times can Danny Brough kick Huddersfield to victory against Warrington without someone at Warrington going, you know what, we should probably work on Danny Brough?
He won't do it this year. He's moved to Wakefield.
So are you saying that that was the turning point then after the Huddersfield game? What was the next game after that?
Well, then we went on our great run. A little bit similar to the run Manchester United have gone on under Solskjaer. They were all winnable. There wasn't the one that wasn't possibly winnable was the one right at the end of that run, and that was the Castleford away when we played them at Water Polo.
Oh, yes, in the wet,
And I think that, I don't know how many we'd gone with wins, but that sort of it was at the end of the run of victories. But all those games through that run, I think, fell very nicely for Warrington. They were all winnable fixtures.
Yeah, we played Wigan when they'd just come back off the plane from Australia and Hull, didn't we?
Yeah, we got them on the bounce, the pair of them. And as Mark Lawrenson said down there in Glastonbury, it's all about confidence.
Yeah, it'll be the same again this year. You watch.
All right, well, we won't go too much more over last season. I'm going to talk about both finals that we made. But leading up to those finals, there was two moments in the season that we should probably mention. Matty Russell was never good enough to play for Warrington.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. It sort of summed it up. Now you've got to try and think about exactly what his contribution was. Was he any good at anything or this, that and the other?
But he was a one-trick pony who had a good 18 months, maybe 2 years, where we were playing front foot rugby and he was scooting from the back of the play the ball and making 10, 12, 15 yards at a time.
Yeah, that was his big thing.
Yeah, but when you look at what happened the moment Charnley came in and you saw Russell was struggling to score and all of a sudden Charnley was scoring every single game, given the same chances. And that's the difference between the wingers. That's the difference. You know, Russell would look at a gap and then find his best way to try and sidestep into the defender and get tackled just short or just end up in touch or just drop the ball.
Calamity of errors with Russell and all those yards he made from acting halfback would all tend to be equaled out by the time he dropped the ball or he didn't play the ball properly. I still to this day think we'd have beaten Hull at Wembley. Ratchford did his homework, kept punting the ball out to Russell's wing. Had we had anyone with any height on that wing that afternoon, I think Warrington would have won the cup. You could have put Chris Riley out there, Chris Hicks, any of the wingers we've had in the past.
Oh, certainly Chris Hicks would have took some of them high balls, without a doubt.
But Chris Riley, you've got to give the kid credit where it's due. He was always competitive. And whether Riley would have caught those balls, he would have still got himself in a position for the opposition player not to catch the ball.
Yes. Yeah.
Ben Curry. Never looked the same since the operation, plural. Has been running around literally on one leg. Went to the World Cup. He must be thought of very highly. For a guy who'd not played any rugby league for almost 12 months, for Bennett to take him to the World Cup and then put him in the team. I was at the game when they played Lebanon at the SFS.
Oh, yeah.
Not a conducive night to play footy. I mean, it was pouring down with rain. It was just ball up your jumper kind of stuff. But he then played in the World Cup final. We didn't really see him in the World Cup final. And then, of course, the knee goes again. Based on what Ben Curry is being paid and based on the player we now have with Ben Curry, and I know he's a lovely lad and he's been a fantastic servant to the club, but should we be paying so much of our salary cap to Ben Curry?
Yes.
I'm just looking at what an ACL injury is, and I've got a picture of someone's knee in bits, and I have to say that, yeah, It's pretty tough, that injury. It really is. I mean, I know they've done all sorts in recent years to be able to, like, you know, get players back. But let's be honest, you're never going to get that speed back again and things. You're always going to be running wary of, like, you know, repeating the injury and stuff. Sometimes you've just got to let go, haven't you?
And sometimes you have to take the dog to the back of the barn. And
I wasn't going to say that, but you've said it. Yeah.
I'm going to go against you both there. I'd say it's far too early for that. I remember first seeing Ben Curry at the Willows playing it was an under-18 or under-19 game or an academy game. They changed
every
year
what
they're actually called.
Can I just ask a question there, Sam? Was that prior to his knee being completely fucked?
Oh, yes, yeah. But it wasn't about his speed. It was about his hands, really, and his ability. And he was head and shoulders above anyone. He was well thought of. I was told from someone inside the club that while still recovering, Bennett had given him a call, and Bennett had basically said, if you can prove your fitness, you will be at the World Cup. That's how highly he's thought of. So I think it is a perfectly reasonable gamble, and it is a gamble, but a perfectly reasonable gamble to say, Ben, 2019, prove he can get back fit. And if he can, that will be like a new excellent signing for us. And if he can't, and if he goes again, or he's only a shadow of the player, then...
Back of the barn with the shot.
Time to let go, yes.
The thing is, right, is that, you know, you don't wish any ill of folk and everything, but I think what I'm saying is he's basically got to play as though he hasn't had the injury sort of thing to get back to his best.
Doesn't seem to be wearing a leg brace anymore.
No, he's not. I saw him a couple of weeks ago at Atkins do, and he was moving fine, but there's one thing walking around, there's another thing playing top-class sport, isn't there?
Well, maybe just the fact he did play with a leg brace, it's got to be in the back of your mind the whole time that leg brace is on my knee for a reason. Possibly there's a bit more of a placebo effect when it's not there.
Mm. Mm.
Well, we'll talk about the two finals from last year, and then we'll move on to was maybe in the quarterfinal against Wigan, where we really looked structured. Everything we did came off. Tyrone Roberts, give him some credit, kicked superbly that afternoon and put them on the back foot all day. And then we have a Leeds side that's just utterly woeful, and we make our way to the final. Again, Sam, you were there. Dennis, were you there? Can't remember. Oh, no, Dennis went on a walking holiday to Wales that weekend, didn't he? Up Snowdon, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, that's rightly, yes. I did manage to get a signal from Wales. You know, North Wales, no idea. Nobody was interested. I had to go and basically take my iPad down to the bar and watch it in there.
What was your tipple that night?
Timothy Taylor, apparently.
Oh, well done. Oh, yeah. They didn't serve it there, but it certainly, they should consider selling it in all areas. And Timothy Taylor
down here. I've heard it's a fine brew, Timothy Taylor, and can be exported.
Yeah, if they want to ship it through me, that's fine. I can make sure it gets to you.
Is it time to put a shout out for Brunningham Price pubs and my local, and can I have a free meal when I go?
No.
Okay.
No. Stick to the stats, Sam. Stick to the stats. That's why you're here.
All right. Well, statistically, we lost the final. Statistically, 99 out of 100 meals are served perfect there.
This is the other reason we've got you on, because you're the only one of the three that can say the word statistically.
Oh, dear.
All right, we lost the final, Challenge Cup final. Warrington 14, Catalans 20. Team that afternoon was Ratchford, Lynham, Goodwin, King, Charnley, Brown, Roberts, Hill, Clark, Cooper, Levette, Hughes, Westwood. On the bench, we had BMM, King, Patton and Philbin. We should have won, shouldn't we?
Yes.
Yeah, you know what? I think they were just expecting to win. I think it was just one of them situations where they thought, you know, they've got the crowd, where they were in the league, and it was just going to be easy.
Was there a tendency for bias in the whole lead up to the game? It was all about this Catalan and how Catalan were going to, you know, romantically win at Wembley. Was that playing on Hicks's mind a bit in the penalty count first 20 minutes?
No. We had umpteen chances. I think it was just one of them fate things. We had umpteen chances to score. We didn't take them. Well, we took a couple, obviously. We didn't, even in the first half, we must have broke the line three or four times. And then first and second tackle threw out ridiculous passes as if we were trying to score, forgetting we had tackles in the bank. Meanwhile, they scored just at the right times. They scored just before half time. They scored just after half time and gave them something to cling on to. It was a bit like the Wigan Sheffield match from years ago. Catalans weren't so much as underdogs as Sheffield were, and we weren't quite as good as Wigan were at that period. But same scenario, the underdog got ahead, had something to cling on to, and we weren't good enough on the day. We should have been, but we weren't.
I have to say, though, I mean, let's just try and summarise that. There's a bit of a trend, though, isn't there? I mean, people are call like Warrington, like, you know, they sort of bomb it when they get to the final, yeah, sort of thing. So is that something now that's becoming in the psyche again? And confidence. I'm not sponsored by confidence, but, you know, I'm just thinking to myself that every time they go into a final now, it's just having that in the back of the mind.
I'd use a different word. I'd say composure. We didn't have any composure or patience.
All right, second final. Again, we get to the grand final. Was our best game of the year the semi-final away at St Helens?
Well, it felt like it, if you're going to compare the two.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Saints, I don't know why they didn't run away with that game. They seemed to kick at goal when they didn't need to. I just thought if they just got a couple more points on the board, not kicked at goal on one occasion. Although we looked mightily relieved on a few occasions when they took kicks for goal. Had they just rolled on and got 8 points away from us, then I think the floodgates may have opened that evening. Before we talk about that final, there's one other player we should mention. He's now back here in Australia, and that's Tyrone Roberts, the marquee signing. Had his best game of the year away at St Helens, and I'm basing that on the fact he took over the goal kicking and kept us in that game. He kicked every goal that evening. I think had Goodwin been kicking, Levette had been kicking, Ratchford, we may not have quite got close enough to their tail to win that game. So marquee player got us to the grand final based on his nerve kicking goals.
I think you need to redefine the word marquee on this occasion.
Agreed. Roberts was a reasonable player for us last year, and if he didn't have that marquee tag and being paid however much money he was, people have said, yeah, not bad. But because he had that marquee tag, yeah, people expected more.
Well, you'd know all about marquees being down there in Glastonbury, wouldn't you, Dennis?
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, you probably get it's probably about the same price to get in Glastonbury nowadays is whatever his salary was. So,
Was he more of a tent than a marquee?
It was, gazebo.
Yeah. Yeah. What's bell-end tent, probably.
No way was he a gazebo. So Tyrone Roberts will sum up as a bell-end tent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I've got an interesting inside story about Tyrone, if you'd like. Well, I say interesting. That's a matter of opinion.
Is this a similar story to your erotic fantasies about Tony Smith and never looking you in the eye, or Steve Price giving you a Gary glaze, or Ben Curry's soft hands?
Yeah, along those lines.
Oh, strap in. Let's go.
An inside mole on the camp last year. He's not inside the camp anymore. He is with England Rugby Union. So guess who it is if you want.
Put it away.
told me that early in winter training, Tyrone Roberts brought a heater into training and plugged it in the dressing room and sat basically on it, to which the rest of the squad thought, he doesn't fancy it, does he?
Was Ben Curry there with his knee up against the grill as well?
which position was Anita in?
Yeah.
Oh dear. Kevin Brown with his Worthington's originals, eh?
Worthers originals.
Oh, it's not Worthington, is it?
No,
I think he played football for Manchester City.
That's a No, Worthington's is a different type of bitter. It's a direct competitor of Timothy Taylor.
Oh, well done. Yes. Very good. Ooh.
Right, I've written something down here. I'm going to read this to you. All right. Surely, with all of Simon Moran's money and only two other decent teams in the competition last year in Wigan and St Helens, plus all the other goes we've had at trying to win Super League under Tony Smith, shouldn't we have won it by now?
That's a million-dollar question, nearly, isn't it?
I think Moran spent more than $1 million.
Not just Simon Moran, there's Mike Lomax and Stuart Middleton as well.
Can we just put out there at the moment, we have got a fantastic board, you know, with these three behind us. They're all passionate about the club. We've now got a terrific CEO as well who seems hardworking. He's to the point. Literally and metaphorically, Roger Draper, did he only do one thing? I mean, metaphorically, he talked hot air and literally he put hand dryers in the toilets. Is that all we had from him?
Yeah, very good hand dryers, though. Air blades.
I was reading an article yesterday from Judy Murray and about, you know, everything that went on at the LTA, the LTA trying to grasp onto the fact that Andy Murray is their prodigy, and he's not. He's a prodigy of Spain. Judy Murray took him out of the system.
Yeah, he's for a prodigy, Dunblane and Judy, isn't he, really?
Yeah, and the LTA come back and say, well, he was only at Spain for 12 months and 6 of those months he was injured, but the other 6 months, boy, did it turn his game around.
Where are you going with this? You started with Moran's money, and now you think about Andy Murray.
I think we had a CEO that was full of hot air, and now we've got a brilliant CEO who seems to be in the right place with a terrific board behind us. There's never been a better time at Warrington.
The thing about it is, it's got to be from like grassroots and the whole culture, the actual Warrington Wolves organisation, if you like. In at the end of the day, money doesn't buy you success directly. I think it's almost like, you know, you have to engineer it from, grassroots up and all like the structures in place within the club as well and things like that. Plus, you know, if you're paying them loads of money, then that's also going to help. But, it doesn't guarantee it, does it?
Who paid for Tyrone Robertson Heater?
I believe Tyrone. Well, I suppose directly it came out of his marquee salary, didn't it?
Someone should check them invoices, I think. You know, it's rife from what I've heard.
I don't think you can have... Well, yes, you can have a criticism against the board, but you can't in terms of the money. They've put everything. They've put training facilities in at Padgate.
Yep.
We've got a stadium that's excellent. We've got... as many coaches and physios and I suppose the only criticism you can have at the board is, did they get a little sentimental about Tony Smith, who, let's be fair, for the first 4 or 5 years, 6 years, however long it was brilliant, and then started to edge off, and should they have got rid of him earlier?
It's the same decision maker about Ben Curry's knee as well, isn't it? That's the thing about it. Sometimes you've got to edge your bets and think, I think Ferguson used to do it at Man United all the time, didn't he? He used to get all these players and everybody used to go, oh, what are they getting rid of him for? You know, he's in his prime.
Yeah, it's the crux of the matter. Well, it's not. It's the Achilles heel. Well, no, it's not. It's his knee, isn't it?
It's the ACL. You know what I mean?
So you've both kind of faffed around like politicians on Newsnight. I'll go back to my question. I'm going to bring you back around like Paxman would. Should we have won it by now? One word answers, please.
Probably.
No, I don't think it. No. See, by answering that in that way, you're probably going to say, well, if you mean no, what do you mean?
It's my show. It's Newsnight. I'm Paxman.
Like a hypnotic answer that was. Completely stumped there. I wasn't expecting that. What do we do? Where's my script?
Can I ask a question? Could you be Fiona Bruce instead? She's a bit more aesthetically pleasing.
Do you think so? Do you think so? Have you seen Fiona Bruce in the bars of Stockton Heath like you've seen Helen Skelton?
Oh, don't get me on Helen Skelton. Overrated.
Okay. Overrated? Okay.
Lovely. Fair enough. Lovely young lady, but overrated.
Where does she play?
Sanderson. Gregory. Through the gap again. Rapport is there once more. Thornell is there. Forster's there. Marvellous Warrington try. Mark Forster finishing it off. But a try that belonged to the whole Warrington team.
All right. Okay, let's move on to the squad then. We'll move on to 2019. I've got the squad written down here. We'll go through each and every player. We'll start with the backs. Now, I'm going to come back to both grand finals, and I'm not going to be light by saying this, but I'm going to run with it. Stephen Ratchford, up until last season, was a utility player, a jack of all trades, a master of none. I was pleased when Price came in because he locked him down in a spot and he's played at fullback all year. Okay. I'm going to read out a list of ex-Warrington fullbacks. They've all played for Warrington. Some of them didn't play fullback for Warrington, but they played fullback for Manly, or they played fullback for Widnes, etc., etc. Which one of these, if we went to a future grand final and you could swap Stephen Ratchford with any of these fullbacks, based on the fullback now in the modern game, so they've got all the dietary needs that they need, they've got the gym, they've got all these things that you were talking about, Sam.
Jim, which ones would you... Jim?
Jim, J-I-M. He does the kit, doesn't he?
Oh, aye, that's him, yes.
Okay. You know Jim, don't you? Dennis, doesn't he work for Timothy Taylor's?
Now then. I don't think so. I think he's long gone
on,
now.
Moving on.
Right, here's the list of players. Okay, Dennis, I'll go to you. We'll run through all the players. You give me a yes and no, mate. Straight off the top. Would you swap Stafford Ratchford for Graham Appo?
No.
Paul Ford?
No.
Phil Blake?
Different. Possibly. I would say yes, definitely. You know, he's still around, isn't he? He's a defence coach now. Didn't know that.
Well, I think he's back in Union. I think he's back in England. I saw him in Rebel Sports in Manly about a year ago, and I lost my bottle to go up to him and basically see how he was.
He got a six-month ban for betting. I think he's a defence coach for Leicester. That's been an interesting fact.
Yeah, he did. I wonder if his shoe came off when boarding the plane. His boots used to come off every week at Wilderspool when he kicked over the top. I think Tony Barrow was the coach at the time, and he said, but Phil Blake, any boots in the world? Defence wins matches, look at the poster. But no, Phil would play in his slippers every week.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm pleased we've stayed on the yes and no answers. Brett Hodgson.
No.
No?
No, well, you just said, let's stay on a yes, no answer. I give you one, and now you're questioning it. It's like this hypnotic answer that you keep getting. No, the thing about it is that, he had the the attributes of a good fullback, but he was just
lightweight. Yes or no? Yes or no?
No.
Phil Ford, he's a stepper.
No.
Once pinched Bob Eccles' car. Stuart Reardon.
Made a few good breaks.
No.
Sorry, was that yes or no, Dennis?
No.
A few good breaks. No. Okay. David Lyon.
No.
Brian Johnston.
No.
Richie Mavers.
I've got no for a lot, I think, at the moment, haven't I? But I don't really recognise any of these. They're all, like, various reasons. Like, Richie Mathers, end of his career. It's like Lyon. I think he was just, like, a good local lad.
Good businessman, David Lyon. Kept a job while he was playing for Warrington.
Yeah.
Right attitude. No heater in the dressing room for David Lyon. He used to actually bring in a fridge and sit in it for 5 minutes before every match. Lee Penny, you get no change out of him.
No, again, another good local lad.
Stevie Hesford.
No.
Brent Gross.
No, can hardly remember him. Remember the name, but I can't really remember him.
Oh, boyo! Oh. Jonathan Davis. Oh, boyo! Was it mine?
Where's he from?
That was the worst casual racism impression I've ever heard.
Now, here's the thing, right? He really annoys me because he still commentates on rugby and he knows absolutely jack shit since leaving rugby many years ago. And I can't understand him anyway. And I really dislike him. But other than that...
Yes or no, Dennis? Yes or no?
I would say yes, because he can't help, like, he scores some cracking tries. And, yeah, he was good.
All right, Sam. Yes and no, please.
Hang on. I'll save you the time. Brett Hodgson and Jonathan Davis, for me, would get in front of Stephen Ratchford. And then of the others, Brent Gross in patches alight and Brian Johnson in a different era alight. But only, I could only give you a yes to Brett Hodgson and Jonathan Davis.
Phil Blake. In a different league to Stephen Ratchford. Hodgson,
but not,
yes.
Fair enough, but not at... I never saw him at fullback.
Look, you could play Blake at 6, 7, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay. You could probably play him at 13. He's just incredibly talented player. Brett Hodgson, yes. Phil Ford, no. Stuart Reardon, no. David Lyon, no. Brian Johnson, yes, without a shadow of a doubt. Another marvellous fullback for Warrington. A lot of people think about him as the coach of Warrington, but the way he used to run onto Andy Gregory's balls, or I should probably rephrase that, the way... whether it was Andy Gregory, whether it was Keith Holden, whether it was Martin Crompton...
He liked to run onto people's balls.
Mate, Brian Johnson could run onto any halfback balls. Richie Mathers, no. Great guy, no. Lee Penny, no change out of him, no. Steve Hesford, possibly, just for his goal kicking and also his high ball. Brent Gross, no. And again, I'd put Jonathan Davis in a similar category to Phil Blake. There's only so many players come along in a generation that are just so talented. Phil Blake was one. Jonathan Davis was another.
I would caveat your answer by saying I only saw Phil Blake twice.
Excuse me, Sam, just one second. Dennis, can you get the dictionary? Sam's just said caveat.
Just a minute. Apparently it's some neckwear used by people south of the river.
Roland Phillips feeds inside for Jonathan Davis. Davis goes. Davis is surrounded. Puts in the chip kick. This would be a try and a half. Jonathan Davis gets there. Have another look at that. One of the tries of the season.
When would you like the stats I've got for you on Stephen Ratchford?
Can we have them prior to Helen Skelton's stats?
Yes, you can have them prior to Helen Skelton's stats.
Helen Skelton's stats are over to the stat man.
34... No, we better not go that way. She's about 5'3", about 9 stone.
Talking about Tyrone Roberts, what about Helen Skelton? Right, give us the stats on Stephen Ratchford.
15 tries. He was our second top try. So he was our best assist person. If you compare that to Bryson Goodwin, who people think had a great season, Bryson Goodwin scored fewer tries and only had 4 try assists compared to Ratchford's 19.
Well, he spent half the year concussed.
And people think that Ratchford is full of errors. Ratchford had 32 errors compared to Bryson Goodwin's 31. But Ratchford carried the ball 427 times compared to Bryson Goodwin 300. So he's carried the ball 33% more and made only one more error.
Can I bring up 2 stats, please?
Yep.
Stat 1, he drops the ball in the Challenge Cup final in the first 5 minutes, which leads to Catalan scoring from the scrum and sets the theme for the afternoon. Stat 2, in the grand final against Wigan, Wigan kicked to the corner, Ratchford's completely out of position. Best player in position for that kick was Robert Hicks. Ratchford goes to sleep. We lose by a score.
stat three, he was voted man of the match in the grand final in a losing team. So where were his other 12 mates when he was playing excellent?
And that's why he's the stat man.
I'm the stat man!
All in all, based on salary, everything else, we're pleased with Stephen Ratchford. We need him to improve just ever so slightly this year in his composure, yeah?
Yes.
All right.
Very confident.
Tom Lynham. Not got much to say on Tom Lynham. He is what he is, right?
Where does he get his name, the Flying Pig, from? Where's that? Can anybody tell us that?
I think he's give it to himself.
I think he scored some fabulous tries in the last year. There's no doubt that the relationship between him and Tony Smith went sour. But I think Price, to Price's credit and to Lynham's credit, I'll pick him every time. Okay, Bryson Goodwin. Look, in and out of South's team before he came over. No doubt about it. Good professional. Runs straight lines. Gets knocked out every third week. Are we happy with Bryson Goodwin?
He always looks dazed to me. He looks like you say, he's been knocked out.
What you're confusing that with, Dennis, is he's Australian.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. Just make a note of that for next time. Yeah, he always looks out of sorts. He looks like he's been, so could be it.
I think some credit's due here. 10 years at the club, 10 years playing pretty much in the first team, the whole time during his 10 years, and that's Ryan Atkins. Terrific athlete. Okay, maybe not a 10 out of 10, but he's consistently 7 out of 10.
Yes, I have to... hold my hands up here and say I have got a vested interest. I know Ryan, not very well, but a little bit. I like Ryan. He's a good...
It's gone off another fantasy, Dennis.
I know, yeah.
He's a good, honest lad. He's a regular 7 or 8 out of 10. And I suppose I get a bit defensive because I hear people say, bloody hell, Ratkins, you can't... And I think, just hang
Ratkins.
On a minute.
Who's Ratkins?
That's our Atkins.
Rat fans.
Yeah. I've forgotten all about Roland Rat. You just said that.
Ratkins.
I'm gonna try that as my new shout next week. Ratkins. Come on, Ratkins.
Did he invent the Atkins diet?
Yes.
That's the sort of question I bet you get asked all the time, isn't it?
It's true. He invented the Atkins diet. Consists of eating a lettuce leaf and then jumping for the corner and nowhere near the try line. That's what it consists of.
And he did that. He made a big cock up of that. And then a week later, he took the piss out of it.
Can we not have the word cock on the show, please?
Okay. Apologies.
Edit that out. You can use the word when you talk about Sam Tompkins, but we're having no cocks on this show, okay? I've got a bit of homework for you here, Sam. Prior to next week's show, can we get the averages, please, on Atkins and Goodwin? I want them as a mean, mode and median.
For metres or...?
He's going to do it, Dennis. He's going to do it.
Oh, dear.
Josh Charnley, great signing. Brilliant signing. Fantastic signing. More of the same. I've only got one problem with Charnley, and that he's friends with that utter knob, Sam Tompkins. I still blame him for Ben Curry's knee injury. If you watch that try, Tompkins sticks his leg out just before Curry goes over, and I think Curry's knee goes in that little jig before he goes over the line, a second before he winces.
It wouldn't surprise me. Tompkins put his legs out to try and stop anyone. I can't believe he wasn't banned when he did it about five games in a row.
Right, I've written this down now. This is Blake Austin, so I'm going to read something to you. All right. His best year at Canberra was 2015, when for the most part of the NRL season, Austin was the most exciting and dangerous attacking player in the competition, leading to Austin being awarded the Dele Alli Halfback of the Year. It was also the same year as shy, cautious Josh Hodgson joined the Raiders. But as time went on, Hodgson grew in confidence. So I'll put it out there, and it's no coincidence that players who have lined up with Josh Hodgson, performances have diminished. Players such as Blake Austin, Luke Gale, Kevin Brown, and even Darryl Clark So I'm going to call it the Hodgson effect. It's a condition caused by lack of ball because Hodgson hogs the bloody ball. And I think we will see a Blake Austin of the 2015 in the NRL. Now he's broken clear of the shackles of Josh Hodgson.
Your best place to comment on him, because the thing about it is, all we've got is, like, you know, the highlights, which always show you the best bits. But, well, you know, from a week to week thing.
I would venture to say he was in my fantasy team 2 years ago because I needed a backup halfback and he was cheap. So I did watch quite a lot of Canberra. And although it was only a friendly, so I'll use the word caveat again. Do you want to get your dictionary out?
So at the moment in your fantasy team,
yeah,
we've got Tony Smith with his seductive not giving you the eyes. Steve Price with his come on and let's go for it eyes. Ben Curry in his knee. Ryan Atkins. The soft hands of, who had the soft hands? Oh, Ben Curry's got the soft hands. And now we've got Blake Austin.
The direct running of Blake Austin. I went to the game last week, the Atkins testimonial match against Widnes. As I say, it was only a friendly. It was only Widnes. But Austin was everywhere. He was all over the pitch. He took the game. He's going to take this. He's up for this. I think he will
Dennis
be.
Dennis was up for it in Legends.
Yes, he will
I'm
be.
I'm trying to work out, is it if he's a marquee then? Let's do it on a match. For me, let's put it as a big tent again now.
He's a big tent. He's a big tent. And whereas I felt Tyrone Roberts shrank in that role, Austin will.
Because he's next to the heater.
Austin will love it. He will love being the centre of attention. He'll love being the big man. And he will take this competition by the scruff of the neck and he'll do what Ben Barber did, but he'll do it for the whole season.
He's had the shackles thrown off. Josh Hodgson is nowhere to be seen. Ricky Stewart, who is probably more pessimistic and more dour than Mourinho was at Manchester United. He will flourish again.
He's going to be brilliant.
Well, that brings me on, I guess, to the yin and yang, doesn't it? So to counterbalance the Blake Austin, we have Kevin Brown, 54 years of age.
Has he still got all his teeth?
I don't think he's got any teeth. Now, I'm gonna come to Dennis on this because I know Dennis has got a bit of an analogy on this. Is Kevin Brown's rugby league form a metaphor for his caffeine hygiene rating?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I've been looking into this. A few years ago, it was actually a very low score. He's currently on a score of 3 out of 5. So if that's as good as he gets, that's as good as we get. So I'd have to say that, it's not going to improve.
All right. So would you eat in a 3-star out of 5-star rating cafe, or would you walk on by? In Wigan, so that must be pretty high for Wigan.
Yeah, I mean, I'd walk on by. I mean, he's just introduced some onion rings. That looks like a thingy. Apparently, our man calamari. Someone's.
You sure that's not Ben Curry's knee?
It could be the ligaments, couldn't it? That could be the inside of Ben Curry's knee. Yeah. The thing about it is, I don't really like to talk about Kevin Brown because it would be mostly negative. So. It'd be interesting to see what his stats are.
20 assists last year, top of the assists for Warrington Wolves.
He'll get on really well, I think, with Bryson Goodwin, because, I mean, they both had knocks to the head and, like, don't know what the hell's going on around them most of the time.
Joe Rapati to Sanderson. Oh, this is beautiful rugby. Will Boyd dummy? I think he will. He's in. Referee John McDonald. Give him the try. I think Les Boyd there, he could have done anything. He had a 2-to-1 overlap. I think he trusted in his size, he trusted in his physique. And it's a try. Tremendous drop forward, this lad. Possibly this season, at his peak, one of the best in the world.
Right, so that completes 1-7. Are we going to be greedy? Are Warrington going to sign anyone else? Well, To understand what that's all about, Dennis Waywell, earlier this week, spoke to Madame Boyd. She's a medium, a psychic, living in Glastonbury. She's come up with some amazing predictions in the past for Warrington. Dennis spoke to her earlier this week. We'll play Dennis's conversation.
Hello, this is you on the control tower. Do you want number 77?
Good evening, Madam Boyd speaking.
Ah, Madam Boyd, it's Dennis Waywell.
Oh, Mr. Waywell, I've been expecting your call.
So, Madam Boyd, could we have this week's prediction, please?
I have been rubbing my balls, and I can confirm that Gareth Widdop will be with you this year.
Oh, really? Have you got anything else to add to that, then?
I'm sorry, dear. That is all I can offer at this moment. I must go now and do some more rubbing of my balls. Goodbye.
If you wish to leave a record of your call, please state your message at the sound of the tone.
Oh, interesting. So, she wouldn't give you any more on Widdop?
No, nothing at all. It was a very quick call. I think, she was thinking that she was going to get paid a bit more than your offer of 25p. I told you she was she's quite serious about it.
Why don't you offer a couple of cases of Timothy Taylor?
That's a very good idea. I might have to put that. In fact, I'll ask her that question next time just to see if this podcast is actually doing the trick. But the point she makes about Widdop, I think, is that, we've talked about Ben Curry's knee, whether it had last the season. You look what's happened. Is it Luke Gale where they've paid him off sort of thing for a year? But, I mean, the thing about it is we could be in a similar situation with Ben Curry this year. And then what do? Do you release that salary cap? And then if, is it the Dragons, they don't get a sort of good run at the end of the season, he's over here before the end of the year. Maybe there's something in that.
The interesting thing with the Dragons is, of course, they've signed the lad from the Eels. So they've got halfbacks with cover. And then they've got Matt Dufty, who is bloody rapid, the young fullback. So he's going to be kicking his heels on the sideline. They could release Widdop and still be perfectly happy with what they've got.
The rumour seems strong to me. They've got players in the pipeline at the Dragons. The coach has fallen out with Widdop. Could well happen.
Yeah.
Could well happen. We probably won't finish in the top five now and then he won't be able to come over.
Yeah. Okay. I reckon she's, I think she's got, there's something about her. Definitely. I can hear it in her voice.
And you think we've got another rumour from Madame Boyd next week?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I said, would she be prepared to rub her balls again? And she was, she's well up for it.
Okay. Let's do the forwards. Chris Hill, just a quick one on Chris Hill. There's not much to say about him because he's just been a diligent hard worker at Warrington in that front row now for numerous years. I think the captaincy being taken away from him ever so slightly will improve him. I think under Smith that last year, he was spending too much time talking to referees and not focusing on his game, possibly. Dennis, you were at the grand final. You sent me a WhatsApp message to say, I hope they're paying Chris Hill a fair bit of money because he doesn't half get through a lot of work.
Well, I've been sat here trying to think of what tent he would represent because, we know we've got marquee players and everything, but he is a marquee player, in my opinion. And I think, I don't know what sort of tent it would be, but it'd be a bloody big one.
Conservatory?
He'd be the type of tent the SAS would take because they know he could rely on it to withstand all sorts of shit.
That's not a bad analogy. Have you got any stats to support that?
I'm the scat man!
Chris Hill last year, 877 tackles, 15 misses. Just 15 misses out of 877.
I think at one stage, Richie Myler had at least two misses on the go, didn't he? Okay, Daryl Clark. Can he really continue with such intensity? I mean, boy, what a player, hey?
He's one of those ones that just keeps going and going, isn't he? And I think the thing about it is that you do notice when he's a bit low, he's obviously carrying a bit of a knock. But even then, you know, he'll give a good 10, 15 minutes where, you know, he sort of pushes the team and just gives that bit of momentum.
Mm-hmm. It amazes me that him and Roby have not come to the NRL. I mean, you know, Josh Hodgson is seen as a good hooker here. I think Clark and Roby are in a different league to Josh Hodgson. And I think Clark could earn three times what he's earning at Warrington if he was to venture over to the NRL.
I rate him. He's brilliant. He's a heartbeat of our forwards.
Mike Cooper. Price has got the best out of him.
Yeah.
The thing about it is that he arrived when we signed him and we thought we were in for big things, but he just never really materialised. But I think in the past couple of seasons, he's actually sort of now being a standout forward with Hill, isn't he?
Yeah, living down in Wollongong, I think for a while, did him the world of good. And I think Mike Cooper's Bryce as well. I think he's probably quite an intelligent young lad. And maybe what he lacks in physique and ability, he makes up for the fact he's got a bit between the ears. We've spoken about Ben Curry. So we'll go on to Jack Hughes. This week, been appointed as the, I don't know what he's classed as, the second captain, the vice-captain,
co-captain.
To me, he's everything that's about the salary cap. He's hardworking, he's a robust forward, he turns up every week, he gets through a ton of work, all at reasonable cost. So to use the analogy, look, I don't think he's a Waitrose, but he's not an Aldi. Is he a Spa? What is he?
Spa?
You've been out of the country far too long, you have, haven't you?
He's a Sainsbury's, I guess.
Is he a Woolworths?
Could be a co-op.
Drop that analogy and let's say that if we had 10 Jack Hughes to do
have
the
a whole,
work,
whole franchise of Spar shots.
And then you'd have fabulous foundations in which to sprinkle your top five or six star players onto. He's the guy who does it week in, week out. He's an 8 out of 10.
I think I see little wrong with him, actually. And if they sold Timothy Taylor at the same time, I think that pun works on many levels.
I as to say that he does it for me.
Very good.
Okay, Ben Murdoch-Masilla. Salford's fans say play him down the middle. Is it a bit like going to the dentist with Masilla? You know, it's all about that anxiety in the waiting room. It's not the dentist's chair. And by that, I mean, let him have a bit of room between running at defences. Throw him the ball and let the defender think, oh, I've got to tackle this beast, rather than giving him these flat balls every week where you're just reactive. You just jump on top of him. Give him 5 yards of space. Let him step off that foot. You get the player that we had at Salford.
He's got quite small legs, though, hasn't he?
I'm a bit worried that he's injured again, though.
This is the thing. I'm in all seriousness, his legs, right, can't support that weight. It's like Curry, and I think he spent most of last season, if not every game, with strapping around his knees.
Okay, Jason Clark, basically we're just getting a fitter, younger version of Super Benny Westford, aren't we?
I hope so.
What you explain, but what's his background? Because he spent obviously coming over.
His background is the last couple of years playing 5 minutes a week for South.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He wasn't playing more than 10 or 15 minutes, was he? He was coming on late on.
No. I mean, he's a bit small. I do worry at times that our back three, when Ben Murdoch-Masilla's not on the field, is a little bit small.
I hate to use the word fantasy again, but the Super League fantasy teams have got him as a prop, which amazes me. He's nowhere near a prop, is he? He was coming on at loose forward for Souths. I'm hoping he can be the equivalent of Trent Waterhouse for us.
Yeah, well, you'll be hoping for a long time there, Sam. He's a bit small to make any inroads, but he has got a decent pair of hands and he's got an offload. He may just possibly be the solution for 13. He may just give us a little bit more guidance at 13. All right, Depp Patton. Another false dawn?
One day he's going to come into his own, surely. Okay. He's going to have to do something.
When is this one day? Because he's played 74 games for Warrington.
I know. And like the Widdop thing, he's probably like sort of like another nail in his like never-ending nailed coffin.
So he's at Salford next year, right?
Could be.
Okay, well, moving on to Salford, Lamatazi. I'm not quite sure how we pronounce it.
Lamatazi.
Yes, please, and a garlic naan on the side. He has, as all sports professionals have, a three-minute highlight clip on YouTube where he's superb. Okay, so the question is, based on the fact that everyone's got a three-minute showreel clip, is his showreel clip better than the three-minute showreel clip of George King?
Well, you would have to say yes. I watched that clip, and I have to say that every one of the... It was split up, so it was in every different game. So one thing I can't see is that, is he able to sort of sustain that in a match? I can't remember seeing him play from last year. So, you know, it all looked very good. Hit-ups, tackling, defence and so on. But is that in a little short spell or what?
What's in George King's highlight reel? Okay, Joe Philbin. At times he runs like a rampaging bull, but slightly too small, always going to be the sort of prop that comes off the bench?
No, you've got to... Too early to dismiss Philbin. Philbin took a big step forward last year. He's only a young lad, still, relatively. He's got bags of energy. I can't imagine...
Is he too small, Sam? Is he too small?
Well, I can't imagine we're paying him too much. He was better than George King last year. So if he is... If he is...
Which one he was. Is that Wham?
If he is our fourth prop, then fine. If you're relying on him week in, week out, no. But if he's your fourth prop in a salary cap sport, absolutely fine.
Well, mentioning Dennis and Wham there, if Chris Hill is George Michael, is Joe Philbin Andrew Ridgely?
Pepsi and Shirley.
Toby King. Does anyone else think he's flat-footed?
I've been looking flat-footed up while you've mentioned that. And I'm just trying to look, what do you mean by flat-footed?
He just lacks a little bit of zing in his stride.
Well, the thing about it is that he seems to be the when they put a kick up, he has this bit of a habit of actually coming out with the ball, you know, when they're challenging jumping.
Yeah, he does.
Up,
yeah,
the ball.
Absolutely. He's, yeah, yeah.
As a stat, that must stand out somewhere, I would say. Because
if he was on Strictly, would he get past week three?
No.
How would he go at the American slow? I just feel he's not got that spring in his step.
American smooth. If you're gonna reference Strictly, get it right.
That's why he's the stat man.
Statistics, charge down, knock-ons, meters, tackles. You can play with my figure anytime, Statman.
Here's a question for you. Helen Skelton or Claudia Winkleman?
Claudia.
I'm going Claudia. Dennis?
Intelligent, exciting evening, Claudia. That's what I get there.
What kind of tent is she? I don't know what kind of tent is she, but boy, would I like to...
Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
All right. Okay, let's carry on then. Sitalicki.
Whoa. That's going to get edited out, surely. Go again.
Sitalicki. Dennis Okorah, as I call him. Seems all loved up on Instagram. I'm pleased for him. He's met a Warrington girl by the looks of it. He's all happy. But are we seeing the reason last year at Warrington why he played pretty much reserve grade at Penrith?
I seem to think that when he comes on, he runs at 100 mile an hour as though he's really going to injure himself. But he's got no fear whatsoever. But I can't understand why
he's got God on his side. He's got God on his side, Dennis.
Well, he's got his new. He had a new little prayer group after the friendly, talking about God on the side, but Dennis is right. He runs at 100 mile an hour when he comes on. And after about 7 or 8 minutes, he's down to about 30 mile an hour.
It's a good job he didn't play at Wilderspool, because he'd have walked down Fletcher Street, met that bloke with the big sign and turned back around, wouldn't he? Has he beefed up this year? Have they put a bit of weight on him?
I don't think he needs to. He's a monster. He's enormous.
He's, It's the one that always goes around the pubs, isn't it?
Hey, I saw him pre-season and he's beefed up. He's a lot bigger than he was last year.
He's actually got steak in his middle name, in his name, actually, isn't he? This Sitalecki guy.
Sitalecki Tibon Alakola.
He's got steak in his name if you take a lot of letters out, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I've been watching Only Connect again, haven't I? Sorry.
Here's one for you.
Yeah, I know what's coming.
Claudia. Kind of tense as she. Ooh. Hey, take a bit of hammering to get your pegs in there, wouldn't it? Right, okay. Harvey Levette. Was it a coincidence that his form ebbed away when he signed the new contract? And what is he? Is he a utility player? Is he a back? Is he a second row forward? Is he a 13? Who is he? What is he? Does Steve Price know? Do we know?
I know his family. I know his family well. And he was injured and playing with injections for the last 8 weeks, 9 weeks of the season.
Could you quote his grandfather here, Sam?
if I used the F word an awful lot, I could, yes.
Well, if you're only quoting someone, then, you know, go ahead.
No, we'll leave that out, but I don't think we can have a sentence without at least two F words in. But a lovely fellow.
How much the fact that he's a ginger does it add to his profile? You know, he's noticed, isn't he? Because he's got the hair. Yeah. Take that hair away from. Give him Chris Hill's hair. Does he knock down a rating?
Has Chris Hill got any hair?
Danny Walker. Okay, our new signing from Widnes. Now, do we have a bit of a merry-go-round going on hookers here? We've got Walker to Warrington. We had Dwyer to Leeds. We've got Morgan Smith to London. Is this just all the clubs going round in circles?
I think maybe you're right. He looked very lively at the weekend. He looked very lively when Warrington played Widnes last year. I think you're right. They go around and they just think he's a good backup and one of them will suddenly make a breakthrough. Whether it's Danny Walker, will he get enough game time to see? I think he'll only get any game time if Clark gets injured, won't he?
Yeah. I mean, the answer isn't Dwyer, is it? We've seen enough of Dwyer to know what Dwyer is. The answer isn't the lad who's gone to London, just hasn't got the pace to play hooker. So, yeah, you're probably right.
Morgan Smith still thinks he's a halfback. That's what he came as, and that's what he went as to London. So
some people think that cock on BBC Breakfast is a journalist, but I tend to differ.
Similar the man name. With a similar name, Dan Walker.
Yeah.
Okay, right. So now, I'm going to move on to the next two players. I think maybe the signing of the season is one of these two players. So it's either Jake Mamo or Matt Davis. We'll speak about Jake Mamo first. Okay, is he better than Ratchford? Is he better than Toby King? Is he better than Ryan Atkins? Where's he going to play? Is he going to play?
I reckon that he's the sort of player you want to put on the sort of wing, I think, or sort of centre sort of thing. I think what he did at Huddersfield, I felt as though he was always restricted. Did he play him at fullback there?
He was fullback to begin with, yes, until he got injured.
Good player. He broke his leg on a motorbike, I think, in Indonesia and didn't ever quite get a pre-season. But
that's right.
I'd go back to a few years ago. If you were to say who would make the squad at the Newcastle Knights, well, Jake Mamo played there. I don't think Stephen Ratchford makes the squad at the Newcastle Knights the year Mamo played. So I rate this kid highly. I think he could be the find of the season. He'll certainly put pressure on the centre position, the wingers. They're all going to have to keep on the toes, which is virtually impossible for Toby King.
I think you've both hit this nail from a different direction. I don't think Mamo will start, but when you look, we had Mitch Brown last year who didn't let us down. When he was called on, he was fine. But if someone gets injured and Jake Mamo comes in, Mamo has the potential to keep that other player out of the team. He's got the potential to get a starting spot and make it his own. So, yeah, I think you could be right there, Rob.
Okay. All right. Well, here's the other one. Hasn't really been talked about yet. Hasn't played for Warrington. And that's Matt Davis. Did see a London Bronco fan tweet that this guy will play for England one day. I know he's a bit small, but working on the equation of what we're paying him salary-wise in comparison to, you know, taking away his performances, is this kid going to outshine them all the new signings?
bit of self-belief needed, because I think I read of something about it, and he reckons it's going to be tough to get in the team this year. So he's not really got the belief yet. He needs that confidence again. Or whether you think, Henderson will get the best out of him, and then he'll just make a breakthrough season.
Did he get player of the year at London last year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do rate him. They do rate him.
Okay, look, I've got not much to say on this next slot, so I'll just run through the rest of the squad. We've got Jack Johnson, Louis Johnson, Pat Moran, Areeb Doro, Ellis Robson, and Super Benny Westwood. Has anyone got anything to add to any of these players? Is any of these players going to be a breakthrough?
Louis Johnson, maybe, but
he's the one, isn't he?
But it's dependent on injuries.
Okay, right. Well, we've gone through the whole squad, so let's now move on to an interesting segment. It's a segment that I'm keen to know about. Sam's keen to know about. It's Dennis's tackle bags. Dennis, over to you.
Tackle bags.
This week, I want to tackle the sin bin. Now, many years ago, don't start. Many years ago, I went to Canada and watched NHL hockey, because we all had the hockey game on the PlayStation.
Wayne Gretzky. Yes.
And you know when you get a player sent off and he gets sin-binned? Well, in ice hockey, if the opposition score, that player is then released from the sin bin. And the reason for that in hockey is because obviously there's not a lot of players, and it soon becomes one-sided. I've thought for a long time that rugby needs to apply the same rule, because sometimes when you've got a close match and, you know, somebody gets sin-binned, even if it's not one of your players, the game becomes just a bit one-sided then. And it's almost like, well, actually, you know, it's good to have that sort of match, the equal matchup, rather than the game just end because it gets, runs away sort of thing. So my tackle or my challenge to you is, what do you think of that as a rule change? And should I write to the RFL?
Tackle bags.
Phil Clark, Stuart Cummings. What's the point? Rant of the week. It's an open floor. Dennis.
Well, I actually enjoy Stuart Cummings. I think, he actually offers a lot of good insight into sort of like, you know, the referee's decision making and so on. I think it's a useful addition to the game, especially for all the, new listeners and newcomers to the game. Am I on my own here?
You are with me. I despise Stuart Cummings.
Right, okay. And Phil Clark.
Oh, if we do this at Wigan. Oh, no, we'd have done that at Wigan. Oh, Wigan are on the ball. Oh, Wigan aren't playing, are they? But if Wigan were playing, oh, yes, they'd be the best team. Oh, and there's no doubt about that.
It was almost as if he was in the room then.
Fuck's sake, move on.
No, right, hang on. I'm going to be controversial. I've met Phil Clark 3, maybe 4 times separate from the TV. And off air, he is charming, articulate, knowledgeable, friendly, approachable, everything. I just think when he gets on air, he tries too hard to be controversial. And if he just was a bit more of what he is in real life, he'd be much better.
Still a pie eater, though, eh?
He is still a pie eater.
Okay, all right. Well, let's move on then. Right, hiccups for the season. I got 2 here. I think one's going to be all right. Homesickness. I think the Australian players have all settled in, so I don't think there's nothing to worry about there at the moment. It's only going to get warmer. They've done the coldest months, haven't they? So a bit of snow they'll probably enjoy, and then they'll all be good. The other one is, presumably at some point in Super League this year, one of the Super League coaches is going to be fired. My money's on Ashford at Hull. Does this mean at some point we're going to say goodbye to Ian Henderson during the year?
Well, I think that the we should be worried, because when you look at coaching setups and all that, I think he's quite an important cog, and he's probably stood out more as, like, you know, second in command at Warrington than anybody else has done in the past. I mean, let's think about, was the plan Jan Anderson set up? I mean, it's definitely a different sort of approach now, isn't it? And he has obviously got a very good reputation from London. So whereas most of the other coaches have had a second in command that have almost, like, has been, or, you know, trying to prove something, this guy has actually already proved it.
Can Henderson fly a plane like Flight Lieutenant Plange?
That's an interesting question.
I don't think we know enough about Henderson of whether he would leave or not. I think it is a worry. No, not a worry. It is a potential thing, because people will look at him. I don't know what his aspirations would be. But if we're going very well and in with a chance, touch wood, of being the champions, would he want to leave? Would he want to leave? He might want to leave for Hull. You mentioned the guy over there. He might want to go to a club like Hull. But if it was Salford or London, nah, I don't see him going back that way.
Right, well, let's move on now to the player that's kind of taken the limelight possibly off the start of the season. And that is the tremendous news. And I know that Madam Boyd broke this news before any of the other journalists about 6 months ago. She was rubbing her balls together and came up with this rumour, which has turned out to be true. And that's Gareth Widdop heading to Warrington Wolves in 2020, possibly earlier, according to Madam Boyd. Sam, let's have the stats on Gareth Widdop.
This guy was standoff of the year in the NRL as recent as 2017. He did dislocate his shoulder twice last year, but even though he spent time on the sidelines last year, he was the fourth top point scorer in the NRL. He was the third top for kicking goals. He was the fifth on the charts for providing try assists. Perhaps the only issue was engaging the line. He was only 30th in the NRL, so he might play in front of the line. But this guy's a top player. This guy is a star.
Dennis, anything to add on Gareth Widdop?
I think at the end of the day, he's obviously, is he at his peak now? Are we going to get him as he tails off and his shoulder's like in the same state as Ben Curry? I think it's all, you know, he's certainly one of the best players at the moment. So, yeah, let's fingers crossed he delivers for us next year.
Yeah, it'll be good. I mean, even though he's coming across and he's 30, he's replacing Kevin Brown, so he's 26 years younger.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to the runners and riders this year before we talk about the opening game against Leeds. We're nearly done. Runners and riders this year. Give me your top five, Dennis.
Well, I've got, obviously, us. I've got Huddersfield, Leeds, St. Helens and Wigan.
Sam, your top five?
I'm going a different way to Dennis. I'm going to say it's Warrington Saints as the top two. And then I'm going to say it's any three from the four of Castleford, Wigan, Leeds and Catalan, if Catalan can get their away form going. And I think they will with the people they brought in.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to go in a bit more, even more contentious than you two. I'm going for my top five of St. Helens to finish top. I think they're getting a better fullback in the lad they've signed this year compared to Barber's up and down form. Yeah, I think he'll go well. I'll go for Warrington in second, and then I think Catalan will finish third. And my fourth and fifth, I'll go Huddersfield and Wakefield.
Blimey, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, well, let's move on now to the opening game of this season. It's exactly the same game as what we had 12 months ago. I think we go into this game with a lot more optimism than we did of pessimism at the same time 12 months ago. We're up against Leeds. You know about this new number six at Leeds, Sam. Tell us a bit about him.
Tui Lola here could be a star man, but... When you looked at him play at the Warriors, I know he was at West last year, but when you looked at him play at the Warriors, he was a guy who had a good game and a bad game and a good game and a bad game and a bad game and then a good game. and he played fullback, he played standoff, he played centre, he played wing. He's a guy who will take the ball up, and if it comes off, he'll look $1 million, but he's equally as likely to make a mistake. He's only 24. He could grow into the role, but I think the first game of the season will be too early for him to beat us.
Who's going to guide them round the park? I mean, if he can't guide them round the park, Richie Myler can't guide them round the park, can he?
I tell you what, to use your phrase, Lola here could be a Stephen Ratchford and a bit of a headless chicken.
I saw the Conrad Hurrell. He's their marquee player. He's quite big and fast. And I was trying to sort of think what sort of tent he would be. I can only come up with, like, I was just looking out the window, even though it's a bit dark, but like a wheelie bin. He's like, he's quite a chunky chap.
He's a monster of a guy.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope he gets emptied on a Friday night. So, predictions. Friday night. Are we going to have a classic Warrington night and it's all going to go tits up? Are we going to be brilliant? Are Leeds going to turn up? Are they not going to turn up? Does the wheelie bin perform? What happens?
I was listening to Ferner the other day, and he's talking about these connections that they've got to establish. Keeps spouting about this word. I don't know. Madam Boyd's probably got more connections than he has at the moment. But because he's already talking down expectations, saying, oh, first three or four games, we're not going to win. You know, we've got to put things together. But I reckon that we'll still win, but it'll be a close game. I've got 26-12.
Sam?
Similar, actually. I think it'll be a bit more comfortable, but similar score. I think it'll be 4-2, 22-14. I think we're a year further down the road. Leeds are where we were last year. So we're a year further down the road. Warrington will win. We'll get off to a good start.
Okay. I think Warrington, possibly all the pressure's on their shoulders and Leeds can come and just play they want to play. I'll go for an 18-all draw.
What?
What, is after extra time and the golden point?
Golden point.
18-all draw, because no one can kick a field goal. All right, well, we're done for now. So we really want to hear from you. So if you've enjoyed the show, if you've not enjoyed the show, if you've agreed with us, if you've not agreed with us, if you believe Helen Skelton is better than Claudia Winkleman, if you know the right analogy for a tent, we want to hear from you. So you can go to our Twitter feed, which is @WhatBevan. You can DM us there, or you can email us directly at whatbevan@gmail.com. Until next week, I'd like to say thanks and goodbye to Dennis Waywell.
The senior.
Sam Sankey.
All the best.
And it's a goodbye from me, Rob London. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say? So come on, Wire. Let's start with a win on Saturday. It's our year. Rob London.